If you drive along Woodward Avenue just north of downtown Detroit, you sure won't miss it. Construction is clipping right along on the new Red Wings Arena, scheduled to open in 2017, right across from the Tigers' home, Comerica Park, which, of course, is across the street from the Lions' home, Ford Field. But here's the thing. Do economic development tactics like shiny new stadiums and arenas or casinos or festival marketplaces, do those really pay off for cities? What really works in urban redevelopment? Michigan State University's Laura Reese thinks the answer could be less glitz, more getting the simple basics done right. She's a political science professor and the director of the Global Urban Studies Program at Michigan State. Her upcoming book, Roads to Prosperity, is co-authored with her husband, Wayne State University professor Gary Sands. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you so much.
What inspired your book and inspired you to dive into this subject?
Both Gary and I have been doing research on local economic development for, probably 30 years or more each. So we've always been interested in questions of what local policies actually can stimulate urban growth or redevelopment or economic health. So we've been chipping away at this for a good long time.
I've got to think in those 30 years, there have been a lot of trends that have come and gone in urban redevelopment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And it definitely is a field that is sort of driven by trends. For a while, as you mentioned, it was, you know, festival marketplaces, and then everybody was talking about having aquariums. For a long time, it was stadiums, and there definitely are a lot of fads that come through the economic development literature, and I think it's an issue of, you know, local officials looking across the country and at what other people are doing, trying to find anything that seems to be working.
And that's understandable. I mean, if you've got a city like Cleveland or Flint or Detroit that, you know, is dealing with the post-industrial shrinkage, you are looking to go, well, hey, what about that very cool downtown aquarium, right? Or that, in Cleveland's case, you look at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and go, hey, pretty good.
Right. What I really want to get across to city officials is there's no one best answer. There's not a single silver bullet that will work everywhere, because every city can't have an aquarium or a stadium. For a long time, it was all about the creative class, you know, attract creative folks and growth will follow. Well,
aren't we hearing that even now in Detroit?
Oh, absolutely. But the thing is, by definition, every city can't be a cool city because trends change. So as soon as you sort of become cool, then someone else will be the new best thing. So you're chasing after a goal that you can't achieve.
Interesting. So you feel maybe that you're kind of questioning the sales pitch that gets some of these projects like these arenas and casinos greenlit?
Yeah, I would question the sales pitch. I mean, what I would encourage is for local officials to decide, you know, we want to be the best city that we can be. You know, the best Detroit, the best Canton, the best Livonia, whatever it is. And the best to you, to that individual community, isn't going to be the same across the board. There's a big difference between being a good, livable, solid community for the residents that are there and chasing after these sort of big, glitzy fads.
Hmm. You're recommending kind of a back-to-basics strategy, right?
Exactly. When you look at the kinds of spending and activities of local governments that are actually related to economic growth, economic health, it's almost never the economic development incentives. Hmm. And what is reliably correlated are things like spending on your local public schools, both for student learning but also infrastructure, spending on parks and recreation. Having a safe community, low crime, good public safety, police and fire, those are the kinds of expenditures that actually are correlated to growth. And if you spend your money on things like tax abatements or deals for sports teams to come, then by definition you won't have as much revenue to be able to invest in those basic things.
One has got to be honest. Casinos are not in the business of putting money into anyone's pocket but their own, for the most part.
That's true. But the casinos actually have made a contribution to Detroit's economy because they're paying a good deal of property taxes.
Yes.
The city didn't have. The thing about the casinos, and this is a good lesson, they're being reasonably helpful to Detroit because Detroit cut a good deal when those casinos come in. If you want to try a stadium or something, it's all in the deal you cut. It's how well it's integrated into the local streetscape, the local economy. We've never said, you know, local government should never do a tax abatement or they should never try to attract creative class. But it's an issue of being smart about it, cutting a good deal, and being aware of your own particular goals.
I'm speaking with Michigan State University political science professor Laura Reese. Her upcoming book, Roads to Prosperity, is co-authored with her husband, Wayne State University professor emeritus of urban planning, Gary Sands, as we look at what might work and might not work so well in urban redevelopment. I'm interested in this idea of staying the course. And by that, I mean, let's talk about the Film Incentive Program, which was touted as a way of boosting Michigan's economy. And Governor Snyder made good on his pre-election promise to kill those tax credits. And I'm wondering about your thoughts. Had that not happened, had the Film Incentive Program been allowed to take root and continue along as planned, could that have paid off for the state?
I have a couple of reactions to that. One of the reactions is that early data on that program did suggest that it was making a contribution. And if you look at one of the related state programs, the Cool Cities grants that were also done during the Granholm administration, those definitely appear to have correlated with economic growth in the communities that used them. My answer is maybe those would have been promising investments in the state if we had kept doing them. The other part of the reaction, though, is both the state and local governments need to remember that no one program like that is going to do the job for you. So you can't hinge Michigan's growth on film incentives, and you can't hinge your community's growth on the creative class. It might contribute. Having a really good art scene makes you more livable, a nice place for your residents to be, but it won't be enough to ensure economic growth.
So you look at a toolbox, in a sense.
Exactly.
And so these are tools in the toolbox, but you can't build the whole house with one tool.
Right. You have to have a variety of tools, and you have to know how to use them.
When you look at Detroit, let's take it back to Detroit. Look at the downtown, the midtown, Corktown, at the development there. Do you see a sustainable development strategy, or at least the beginnings of one?
We're looking at that right now and comparing some of the growth and investment in the midtown downtown area compared to the rest of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who knows Detroit, who looks at the data, you can see improvement in those data for midtown. You drive through midtown and you can see the improvement. But it's not as significant in the numbers as a lot of the media seems to be saying. You have all these reports about, you know, Detroit comeback kid, and it's getting better and you can see improvement, but it's not as big as you would think. Of more concern to me, it's not big enough to save the rest of the city. So when you look at the neighborhoods, areas that are not downtown and midtown, their data on poverty, on unemployment, on income are getting consistently worse even since the bankruptcy.
When you talk and hear Detroit voices, you do hear that. How about the neighborhoods where there are people?
And you look at the maps, if you map out, you know, income, poverty, growth, you see a little bit of improvement in midtown, and then the rest of the city is just getting worse.
And some might argue, well, it has to start somewhere.
And again, I think what's going on in midtown is really nice. It's cool. But I think the more effective starting places would be public safety in the schools. Now, of course, those are the hardest, most long-term levers to pull, because it isn't just pulling a lever. It really is some significant changes and investment.
Well, certainly the conversation that's raging about the Detroit public schools and what we're seeing with the teacher sick outs in order to call attention to the infrastructure and the kind of buildings they're working in. I guess it's a lot easier to advocate for a bike path.
A lot of people talk about the creative class, but I did a paper looking at the pro-creative class, comparing the economic effects of families to the younger, creative, what we used to call yuppie types of people.
Okay.
And the pro-creatives are actually the better driver of economic growth. So to get families, you have to deal with the schools, and you have to make them feel safe. They have to actually be safe. Having a good livable community where all those young entrepreneurs who are in Midtown actually stay in Detroit as they start to get married and have families, they're not going to stay there unless the other issues are dealt with.
So I'm hearing you say in a city like Detroit, better off putting money in new fire trucks or police cars or public safety staffing or getting the schools up to an acceptable level,
yes,
perhaps rather than pumping money into downtown bike paths or downtown aquarium or whatever like
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you think there's an appetite to dial down the glitz and focus on the basics that you recommend?
That depends on where you sit. If you're a resident in the neighborhoods of the city of Detroit, of course there's an appetite. It's a little bit harder for public officials to focus on investments and efforts that are only going to pay back 10 years from now, 15 years from now, because, of course, their electoral time frames are not that long. So they're interested in, you know, what's happening right now. So it's harder for public officials to go after those long-range strategies. But obviously the residents need these sorts of things. And I think, you know, the Flint situation is another example. Detroit, too, has a very old infrastructure for water, sewer, electric, you know, everything. That, too, needs a lot of investment. So it's the schools and other public buildings, but it's also all of that background infrastructure.
Interesting conversation with Laura Reese, political science professor at Michigan State University. Her upcoming book, Roads to Prosperity, is co-authored with her husband, Wayne State University professor emeritus of urban planning, Gary Sands. We'll look forward to that book and look forward to talking to both of you when Roads to Prosperity comes out.
Thanks. We look forward to that, too.